This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast here at thatmomentin.com.
I am your host, The Vern.
For this episode, myself and Movie Rob, we will be discussing a great scene from Tim Burton's 1984 biopic, Ed Wood, starring Johnny Depp, Patricia Arquette, Martin Landau, and a few others I can't think of right now. And joining me for this episode, we have with us Movie Rob from movierob.wordpress.com. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello, Vern. Thank you for inviting me to join in today.
Yes, and we are doing this episode because last week I put up a poll on thatmomentin.com where I wanted to praise a few great film legends that we lost. And I put a poll posting the three movies by George A. Romero and a few from Martin Landau. And Ed Wood won with the majority of the votes. And so that's what we're going to talk about today on the show. But before we get going with the movie Ed Wood, I basically want to have you, good sir, talk about your site and all the great things you do. I will say one thing, though, sir. You are very prolific when it comes to being on the internet. You would connect with a whole bunch of other bloggers and podcasters, and you have them been featured on your site. I was very fortunate to be on your site with a few blogathons. So yeah, please, dude, plug away, man.
Okay, well, as you mentioned before, my site is movierob.wordpress.com, and that's all it is. It's movie reviews. I do relatively short, spoiler-free reviews. Usually get out about two or three reviews a day, depending on my schedule and stuff like that. In the 3.5 years that I've had this, 4.5 years that I've had my site, I've already done more than 3,300 reviews. And as you mentioned, I do a lot of blogathons. Some are my own blogathons. I participate in other people's. Every month I run a feature called Genre Grandeur, which every month it's a different person picks a genre, and we get people to review their favorite movie from that particular genre. This month we're actually dealing with revenge movies. So if anyone out there wants to take part, you're more than welcome to. It's open for anybody. You just have to send me the review, and I post all the reviews on the final day of the month. So usually you have to get me the review by about the 25th of the month. So like I said, it's revenge movies this month. In addition, I'm starting up my next Movies from the Hat, which hopefully will probably be sometime in the middle of October. I'll start it, where basically I have people send me recommendations for movies they want me to watch. I put all of them in a hat, and as I pick them out of the hat, I watch them in that order. And that's going to be counting down to my 3,500th review. So as of now, I assume it'll be sometime in October and November.
Wow, 3,500 reviews. You said 3,500 reviews?
That's what I said.
Damn, that is an impressive amount of movie watching and movie loving there and writing. Wow, that's... Do you even sleep, man? What the hell?
Of course I do. Of course I do. Okay. I usually watch about 4 or 5 movies a day, and, then I have time to review them. So, on an average month, I watch about 70 or 80 movies.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
You're very welcome. And I'm glad, because I'd never seen Ed Wood before. This was my first time watching it. So, you got me to watch a movie that will now be among my favorites, because it was great.
We are going to get into Ed Wood and the performance by Martin Landau, but we are going to take a short break. We're going to play some ads from some other great podcast shows, and we'll be back.
We'll return after these messages. Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
All right, Kristen, I am so excited that you've decided to do a podcast with me, but what are we going to do a podcast about? There's so many other movie podcasts. We got to do something original.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Disney movies. What about something like that?
That's just kids stuff. What do we want to do that for?
Did you know that The Avengers is a Disney movie? Or that Pulp Fiction is a Disney movie?
Pulp Fiction is not a Disney movie.
It's technically owned by Miramax, which is part of Disney.
We are still going to talk about the Disney animated movies, though, right?
I thought you said that was kid stuff.
Well, you know, I've got two kids. I got to be a good dad and stuff.
So be sure to subscribe to the Walt Sent Me podcast, where we discuss the various subsidiaries of the Walt Disney Studios, including the animated movies.
It's available on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts. And I swear, it's not kid stuff.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Cinema Recall Podcast here at thatmomentin.com. As I mentioned before, we're going to be talking about the 1994 movie Ed Wood, starring Johnny Depp and Martin Landau and Sarah Jessica Parker. Now, as always, before we do talk about the particular scenes, we are just going to give you a quick little recap about the movie. All right, so in this biopic directed by Tim Burton, Johnny Depp plays the role of Edward D. Wood Jr., who is considered to be the worst director of all time. He has made such classics as Glenn or Glenda, Bride of the Monster, and his ultimate classic, Plan 9 from Outer Space. And this movie chronicles his rise to fame as he's making these movies. And at the same time, it chronicles his friendship with an aging Bela Lugosi, played wonderfully by Martin Landau. So it's both a homage and love to old school Hollywood, and it also kind of shows how filmmakers will stop at nothing to get their films made. And it's also a very good, tender friendship story between Ed Wood and Bela Lugosi.
This is the first time I ever saw the movie, and I thought they did a really good job of giving us an impression of how a struggling director and a once famous actor, you know, during the 1950s, were able to help each other to further both of their careers at a point where they were both at standstill, one at the beginning and one at the end. And this chance meeting between these two people helped bring about one of the movies that everyone knows to talk about. And that's what Ed Wood wanted. He wanted people to remember him for his movies, which people do, not necessarily in the way that he wanted them to, but he still got what he wished for. And I thought they did a really good job of that.
Yeah, part of me of, like, Ed Wood reminds me a little bit of Tommy Wiseau and The Room, because The Room is now regarded as one of the worst.
I'm trying to remember what The Room was. I don't think I've ever seen
The Room is supposed to be regarded as one of the worst movies of all time now. But Tommy Wiseau, when the movie was first being made, he thought it was very serious. And then it started playing at festivals and around at midnight screenings. And it's considered more of a comedy just because of how bad it is. And now Tommy Wiseau, the director, is sort of like embracing that And, you know, he's like, oh, I made it to be a comedy all the time. So even though it's a bad, movie, he's still getting recognition. Same thing as Ed Wood did. It's a bad movie, but people still know the name. So I guess even if you make a movie that's completely lambasted by both critics and audiences, but yet people are still shelling out money to see it, it still gives you a name. And I'm kind of curious there, regardless of whether or not you're considered a good director or a bad director, as long as you're known amongst the public, does it really matter?
Depends on what you want to be known for.
Yeah, true. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough there.
Directors that are known for being great directors, you know, like the fact that people know them for that fact, not because they're terrible directors. You know, when people seek fame and fortune, they want the fame for something that they do that's good, not necessarily for something they do that's bad. I mean, the fact that Plan 9 bombed, it pretty much killed his whole career. You know, he didn't do much afterwards, definitely nothing that he was remembered for. But I think that's part of the point of the movie, is that he was someone who wanted to make his mark. He made his mark. Again, not how he wanted to make his mark, but he was able to make that mark.
Well, let's get into the actual scenes that we're talking about. Okay, so during the course of the movie, when Ed Wood is making his features, he befriends Bela Lugosi, and he puts Bela Lugosi in his first movie, Leonard Glenda, and he's sort of like the narrator that pulls the strings. But his next feature is a little bit more ambitious. It's called, well, at the time it was shooting, it was called Bride of the Atom. And Bela Lugosi plays a mad scientist. And in one scene, they're basically getting set up for a scene with him in a chair. And one of Ed Wood's cohorts, a guy by the name of Conrad Brooks, played by Brent Hinckley, he comes over to Bela Lugosi, of course, played by Martin Landau, and he says,
Mr. Lugosi, I know you're very busy, but can I have your autograph?
Certainly.
You know which movie of yours I love, Mr. Lugosi? The Invisible Ray. You were great as Karloff's sidekick.
Karloff? Sidekick? Fuck you! Karloff does not deserve to smell my shit! That limey cocksucker can rot in hell for all I care!
What happened?
How dare that asshole bring up Karloff? You think it takes talent to play Frankenstein? It's all makeup and then grunting.
Bella, I agree 100%. Now, Dracula, that's a role that requires talent.
Of course. Dracula requires presence. It's all in the eyes and the voice and the hand.
That's right. You seem a little agitated. You want to go outside and get some air?
Bullshit. I'm ready now. Roll the camera.
Yeah, I thought it'd be extremely funny. I do know when I did some research on this, though, especially from, there's an article from Mysterious Universe from Michael Rose saying that there really was no big fight between the Lugosi and the Karloff family. But I do want to get, you know, your opinions about the scene too, Rob.
Okay, well, first of all, as I mentioned before, I was completely caught off guard by that scene, which is why I think it was such a great scene. I mean, the fact that you're sitting there and you have this 70-year-old man, you know, talking or whatever, and he has, you know, someone who's coming over and saying, oh, I'm a longtime fan of yours, can I get your autograph? And you see his face light up that, wow, someone's, you know, someone's recognizing the work that he did and stuff like that. And you know, mm-hmm. That's the way we see famous people that you know, they like the recognition, you know, that you know who they are and you're grateful for what they did and stuff like that. And then when he mentions Karloff, you know, I just wasn't expecting Lugosi, you know, played by Martin Landau, just start cursing like crazy. I mean, from IMDb, what he basically said was, he goes, "Karloff, sidekick, fuck you. Karloff did not deserve to smell my shit. That limey cocksucker can rot in hell for all I care." And I didn't expect something like that to come from Martin Landau, let alone from Bela Lugosi. And it changed the way I thought of the character, but in a good way, because it shows that he's a real person. You know, he has real feelings. You know, he's also a he wants the fame and recognition, but he wants it on his terms. Not saying that someone else is better than him, or not saying that someone else, you know, that he was good, but someone else is better, or whatever it is. And it just, to me, that scene really made the movie. Now, since I've never seen this movie before, for the last 23 years, ever since Martin Landau won an Oscar, I was always shocked that he won an Oscar. Again, I'd never seen it, and I'd seen the other four performances that he was up against, you know, and my favorite was Gary Sinise in Forrest Gump, and also Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction, and I couldn't understand why neither of them won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor that year. But and I always thought that they gave Martin Landau more of an honorary Oscar for his long career and stuff like that. But after seeing this movie, it completely changed my opinion of that. And this scene was the start of that, because it really showed me how great of an actor Martin Landau was. You know, as great as the other two were, and I mean, there are two other people that were nominated that year also.
Good points there about how you were not expecting him to win the Academy Award, and how you thought it was just a thing for his career, because the cat had, you know, a pretty prolific career. And I only know Martin Landau from a few other movies, mainly Crimes and Misdemeanors and North by Northwest.
Correct, yeah.
So I'm not super familiar with his full career of movies. I know he's regarded as being a very talented actor. And I find it kind of odd that it took until a movie by Tim Burton for him to win the Academy Award. I mean, when you think, like, movies by Tim Burton, you don't really think Academy Award-winning stuff. You think mostly, you know, blockbuster type of movies, too. Or very different and odd independent features you never really would have suspect. Especially for, you know, an acting award, too. I mean, I could probably give Tim Burton some awards for production design, but nothing in terms of acting. And I think Martin Landau shines. I think he shines even in the first scene when Ed Wood sees a roll of coffins. And he walks in and he's there in the coffin. And you think that he's dead. And then he wakes up, he goes, "Ah, it's too constricted. I can't even fold my arms." I'm not going to do a good impression of that. But just even from the first scene of him meeting Ed Wood, you know that you have like a really good and fascinating character. I think it's kind of fascinating that they do bring to light some of his drug addiction.
Right.
Which is something that I find kind of like, you know, ballsy for a film to do. Because this is, you know, Bela Lugosi is this iconic actor in an iconic movie such as Dracula, and showing him being a drug addict, it shows his vulnerable side for that, and I found that to be very impressive. But at the same time, too, you don't hate the guy, you know, even though he is a junkie, you still care for him, you want him to be better, and you actually support Ed Wood making these movies if it will somehow help out his friend.
Correct.
Because Ed Wood, at the time, he was a general fan of Bela Lugosi, and those two did form a mutual respect friendship. You know, he wasn't just looking at Bela Lugosi saying, "Oh, would it be kind of cool or kitschy if I have this actor from Dracula be in my movies?" No, he actually was generally a fan. I do kind of find it funny that Bela Lugosi's family And I would ask you about this too. Bela Lugosi's family mentioned before in interviews that there never was much of fighting. There wasn't much fighting between Karloff and Lugosi. And also, Lugosi never swore that much. That was something his son has stated in interviews, that his father didn't swear that much. So, I don't know. Do you think that this still was, you know, a good representation of that character, despite what some of the family has said?
Well, it's hard to say because of the fact that we don't know how he really was. I mean, as a character on screen, you know, in a Tim Burton movie, it was great. Is that the real Bela Lugosi? I don't know. I mean, but when you watch any movie that's based on real people, you never know who they really are, you know, if they really act that way or not. But you're supposed to take it at face value that this is what they want us to believe the person acted like. And as I said, I was very impressed with the fact that you have this cranky old man swearing and cursing the whole time. I mean, I thought it did a very good representation of it. But again, is it true? Is it real? Is it based on fact? I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, if Lugosi's son says no, maybe not. But that's why sometimes you have to make the differentiation between the real character, the real person, and the real character.
But here's the thing, too, because this movie is more about, you know, Ed Wood's life. And I know the screenwriters of this, Scott Alexander and Scott Frank, I think it is. I'm going to mess up on the names of those writers there. But I know they're kind of basing this off of, you know, Ed Wood's own words. So maybe Ed Wood saw Bela Lugosi in a different light than what, you know, his family saw. Because, you know, we all have our own kind of different sides of when we hang out with friends than what we do with family members. I mean, what I say to some of my friends, I would never say to my mom.
True.
You know?
No, and also Lugosi's son was really young at the time.
Yeah, see, so he probably would never hear his dad say stuff like that.
That's very true.
Oh, you know? Any other things you want to say about this scene here, the autograph scene?
No. Like I said, I think it was the best scene in the film, and it really it gives us the tone of where Tim Burton wants to take things with this story.
Now, the other scene that I want to mention. Okay, so they're in the middle of making Bride of the Atom. And they're having such a hard time trying to get this movie made because they keep throwing these parties to, you know, raise money from distributors. They have no money. So the whole crew and Ed Wood, they have to actually break back into the studio to steal this octopus. And this is where the scene we're talking about begins. They bring the octopus to this river and they get it all set up.
All right, let's shoot this fucker.
Great.
Where do I go?
You'll be fighting with the octopus.
Out there?
Yes.
What happened to the stream?
Well, this is going to look a lot better. We have to match it to the stock footage of the octopus underwater.
Oh, for Christ's sake. God damn, it's cold.
It'll warm up once you're in it.
Fuck you! You come out here! Hey! Throw me that whiskey. How do you turn this on?
Well, somebody misplaced the octopus motor. So when you get in there and fight with him, shake his legs around. It looks like he's killing you. Okay.
You know I turned down Frankenstein.
What?
After I did Dracula, the studio offered me Frankenstein, and I turned it down. The part wasn't sexy enough. Too degrading for a big star like me.
Bella, I have 25 scenes to shoot tonight.
Oh, sorry, don't let me slow you down.
But I like the scene just because, you know, there's like a sense of, you know, disappointment about his life because Boris Karloff, yes, he is known for Frankenstein, but he's also known as the voice of the narrator in the original How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I mean, you know, that whole song, "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." I mean, that is Boris Karloff's voice in that. And so he's kind of well known for other things besides Dracula. And I do kind of think that Bela Lugosi was having sort of a sense of resentment and dread. I don't know. What do you think about the scene?
Well, first of all, to me, that was a perfect scene to show what B-horror movies were like back in the 50s. You know, with their low budget, and, you know, sometimes you just have to do things on your own. And to you know, and when we watch them now, we laugh at how silly it all looks. So the fact that they would say to the main star of the film, you know, move around the legs of the octopus, was just pretty funny to watch, because nowadays you wouldn't really have that in movie making. And even 23 years ago when they made this, that you really wouldn't ask the star to do something like that. But for these type of movies, that's what the stars would have to do. And Bela Lugosi was someone who, you know, wasn't used to dealing with the B movies. So his reaction was great also, because he's like, okay, I'm not normally expected to do this type of thing, but I guess in order to keep working and to do what I love doing, I guess I'm going to have to, you know, get myself a little dirty and do it.
And I know that he's excited about, you know, working again, but when he first starts getting roles for movies, even the first movie he gets, the, you know, Glenn or Glenda, he's just excited to be, you know, working again, because right now, before he was making any of these movies, he was basically living off the government, you know, and getting unemployment payments. And he does, like, an occasional Dracula show here or there, live, just to make some, you know, money. But he was not getting any steady work. And the fact that he started to get steady work again was a huge deal. So, yeah. Oh, very cool. I just like the fact, too, that he's just, there's a bit of, like, bitterness, despair, while he gets into the water. I don't know. I'll ask you, man. Have you seen any of Ed Wood's movies?
Nope, never seen any of them. I mean, I'm a little curious now to see Plan 9 from Outer Space, but I'm not really sure if I really want to spend the time.
You know, actually, Plan 9 from Outer Space is not a long movie. You can get through it, though. It is kind of neat to see how accurate Tim Burton made those set pieces look, because they are very similar to the set pieces in the movie. And not only that too, but the various stilted dialogue that the actors say are very much taken verbatim from the original movies. Let me ask you this though, what did you think about, you know, the movie being shown in black and white?
It helps get me into the feel that we're watching a movie about B-movies from the 50s. So from that perspective, I think it worked.
Yeah.
You know, I at the very beginning, you notice that it's black and white, but, you know, after a few minutes, you don't even notice the difference anymore.
Yeah, it kind of puts you more into that world.
The fact that you just mentioned right now that it was in black and white had to remind me, you know, that reminded me that it was in black and white.
Oh, yeah, I know.
If you would have asked me, was this movie in black and white or color, I would have had to start thinking. And I saw it yesterday, or two days ago. Something I would have had to think about.
Oh, very much so. Here's a cool thing, too. Now, Tim Burton usually works with, Danny Elfman. Danny Elfman has composed all of his music. I was surprised to know that Danny Elfman did not do the score for this movie.
Right, it was Howard Shore.
But it feels like a Danny Elfman score. Howard Shore, the guy who composed the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and he composed a lot of David Cronenberg's features, composed the music for this. But yet, from that very first theme, it sounds like a Danny Elfman movie. And I remember watching this for the first time, and I never looked at the composer, and I always just thought it was Danny Elfman, but this is the only movie that Danny Elfman didn't compose, and yet it kind of does feel like a Danny Elfman score, but I enjoy the score of this music very much. You know, it kind of puts it into that era of, you know, 1950s B-movies, but there was like a sense of heart and realism to it that I really enjoyed.
I definitely agree with that.
Anything else you want to say about, you know, these scenes or Ed Wood or Martin Landau in general? Because I think it's a love letter to making movies.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
But I think that's going to wrap up things right now for our discussion about Ed Wood and about the few scenes there. Now, as always, we do a poll of movies that you can choose about for our next week's episode. Hold on here one second. I'm just pulling up that list right now. Hold on here. Give me one second here. Okay. So what we do, our next episodes, we're going to give you a list of five movies to choose from. You choose what you think is the best movie, and then we'll talk about a few scenes from that movie. So, with the recent release of Atomic Blonde, starring Charlize Theron, I went to list five badass female fighters, okay? Now, this would be a great list of having, you know, women fighting in films. And for this list, I did remove Sarah Connor and Ellen Ripley just because I know that they would get chosen. And I want to choose five women off the beaten path, all right? So here are your five choices. So we got Hannah, played by Saoirse Ronan in the movie Hannah. We have Hit Girl in the movie Kick-Ass. Hit Girl, of course, is played by Chloe Maurice Grace. We have the movie Everly, played by Salma Hayek. We have The Bride in Kill Bill, played by Uma Thurman. And finally, we have Carrie in the movie Carrie, played by Sissy Spacek. So, those are your five choices, all right? As always, you can go to thatmomentin.com and find the poll. Usually, the poll will post probably a day or two after this episode airs. So, just remember to go to thatmomentin.com to choose your favorite lady that fights. And our next episode, we'll be talking about one of those scenes. Any opinions about those features I picked, Movie Rob?
Which of these five I would have chosen?
Well, yeah, I was asking you, what do you think about these five choices?
The truth is that I've actually only heard of I haven't heard of all of them before. I mean, if I was choosing, I would obviously be choosing The Bride, you know, from Kill Bill.
Oh, nice one.
Because she really was badass.
I think that's probably the one that's going to win. So that's probably the most well-known. I just didn't want to use, like, Sarah Connor, Ellen Ripley, or even Wonder Woman, just because I feel like those characters are too well-known, and I kind of want to talk about somewhat a little obscure. Plus, Ellen Ripley and Sarah Connor, they never actually fight that much.
Completely understandable.
Yeah. Kind of use women that actually do a little bit more fighting, all right? As always, you can listen to each episode of Cinema Recall on Podomatic, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and even SoundCloud, I believe. Definitely check us out on Twitter. We are at That Moment In. Check our Facebook page at That Moment In. I know eventually I'll set up a Facebook page for Cinema Recall. I haven't done that yet. As for me, you can find me on at Video Vanguard on Twitter. You can check out my other site, The Verne's Video Vortex at videovortex.wordpress.com. Movie Rob, please share all the great places you're at, sir.
Okay, I can be reached at on Twitter at Real Movie Rob. My website is movierob.wordpress.com, and anyone who wants to contact me by email, you can also write to me at rob@movierob.net.
Yes, and I will highly suggest adding Movie Rob to your Twitter feed, because he does share a lot of great posts from a lot of other great writers, and you know, he's a good friend of the movie community. I mean, you are the main cat that brings a lot of people together.
That's what I try to do.
I really do appreciate that.
Thank you very much for that, Vern.
The way that, because I find it amazing that you're very, I've got just major love and respect for you, sir.
Thank you very much.
So I highly suggest you check out his reviews, check out his guest spots and other shows, you know, check out his guest spot on the Lambcast when he talks about Saving Private Ryan, because it won the movie of the month for August, I believe.
July.
No, not for August, for July. I think that's going to wrap up everything right now. Again, thank you all for listening to the show. We greatly appreciate it, and we hope you have a good night.